listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to LA Talk Radio tonight. Me and my buddy here are sitting in the snow, except it's July and there is no snow. The Ultimate Life, and I'm here with a couple of great guests, Nick and Ryan. Some of you will know them. Nick and Ryan, welcome to the show.
Well,
here they are. So I'm going to have you guys. Yeah, I know you are. And this is my turn. So I'm going to have you guys do some introductions, and I'm going to have Nick. I want you to tell us who Ryan the Lion is. I want you to introduce Ryan for me, for the audience. And I don't want you to do the regular weird stuff. I want you to tell me what his heart is. Who is he?
Yeah. Ryan the Lion Morris. We call him the Lion Morris, or he calls himself the Lion Morris. The guy has the heart of a lion. And so he's one of the most caring individuals I've met. He's one that really sees to the heart of people. And so I've worked with Ryan for about 4 years, and he's a person that puts up with my personality. So that's a pretty strong characteristic, I think. Ryan is the co-founder of what we've created here with the Giants and the Smalls. And Ryan is the life of it. He is the energy behind it. He is the one that makes people feel welcome and a part of a tribe and community. He's much better at that than I am. And so he's just a good human being who cares deeply for other people.
Great. We'll get to dig into that some, and I'm going to ask you all kinds of interesting questions. Ryan, I'd like you to introduce me. No, I'm teasing. I'd like you to introduce Nick. Tell the audience, who's Nick?
Yeah, well, it would be easy for me to introduce you to because of the type of person you are. And Nick is that type of a person as well. Absolute giant. We call him the gentle giant. Nick wrote The Giants and the Smalls, the book, and he wrote it in, 2009? And when him and I got together, we started a whole different thing. We didn't even start doing this. And the right opportunity came along, and we knew that this is where we needed to be. And Nick has a heart of gold as well. He is a content machine. This guy can put out content like nobody's business. He understands human behavior, psychology. He's just an absolute dynamite of a coach, and you won't find a better human being, I promise you that, out there in the world.
Well, I have two amazing human beings, as indicated by each other, so I'm excited to have you here. So, Nick, I'm going to ask you a question here. What prompted you? What is there in your heart? Like, this is the show about the ultimate life, creating a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy by serving with your gifts, your life experience, and so forth. What prompted you in your heart to write this book, The Giants and the Smalls? So what is it, and what in your heart said, I need to write this book?
Well, I've always been insatiably curious about life and how it works, and especially how I work. I was going through a difficult time in my life back in 2009. I had lost a business. I was bankrupt. I was foreclosed on. My wife at the time was saying, look, you got to do something or our relationship's going to change. I was getting food at a welfare center in Salt Lake City, Utah, and of all things decided to become a life coach and trainer. I think that's what you do when you're down and out is you become a trainer, teach people how not to live. I met with a gentleman named Steve Hardison, and he essentially put me on his shoulder, metaphorically, stood up, showed me the potential that I have within me, and that became a seedling to everything that followed. And I was listening to every book I could get my hands on about the world and how it works and how to overcome those heavy emotions, and I was listening to Who Moved My Cheese by Spencer Johnson, and I thought I could write that. And so I did. I wrote my metaphor called The Giants and the Smalls. And it was a journey before I had even gone on my own journey, right? I wrote this book about what giants would say to me if I went on this adventure to learn how to become a giant, because I felt really insignificant and small in my life. And so that's what inspired is I felt insignificant. I didn't want to feel like that. I wanted to see if it was possible for me to do big things.
So that's really interesting, because a lot of times people don't write until they're done. Like, I meet a lot of people in the process of coaching and helping people write books and all the stuff that I do that feel like they got to be done with something. And you've just there said, No, I wrote this book when I was busted and talked about the idea of being okay. And yeah. tell me what I want you to talk to that directly and specifically. What is there about the documenting the process of being vulnerable, about being busted, and documenting, and busted is metaphorical, but the process of making a choice and then making a change from that place?
Yeah, I mean, it first is a realization that we all go through some form of this, or many of us go through a form of this. It seems like there are some people that don't, but I think they do. They just move through it quicker. I wanted to show others vulnerably what my journey was. And so I started documenting that as I went along. I ended up going back to school, getting a degree in industrial psychology. I became a car salesman, like two ends of the spectrum there, right? The worst kind of people and the best kind of people are psychologists. But I started diving into the world of the mind. I wanted to know, why do I do what I do? Why do I feel anxiety all the time? I had a decade-long bout with anxiety. I was diagnosed in 2017 with anxiety disorder, and I felt I was lost. I started labeling myself as everything you could imagine. I'd read a book, and I'd say, that's me. And then I'd go about acting like that was me. And then I'd try and resolve that, you know, as though that was me. I met with a doctor once and he said, just because you have the traits of something doesn't merit the diagnosis. And that really stuck with me. That was another point in my life where I started to see I am not what's going on within me. And I wanted to be able to teach others how to do that, but I wanted to do it with evidence. I wanted to show with research and science that you could actually change your life, right? Because philosophically, I had fallen out of favor, so to speak, with my version of what I thought God was at the time. So I wasn't really connected to that when I went through this journey. And so for me, I came from a secular view, but eventually that fed back into my life where it became kind of a blend of the two worlds. Hopefully that.
Yeah, that's perfect. So Ryan, yeah. I want to jump over to you. Nick said that everybody goes through this thing, and some people call it a hero's journey, and some people call it a mess in the swamp. So what is there about you that makes you, that calls you to this journey that Nick described, giants and smalls, not his journey, but yours? Like, you guys are peer partners. I've been on your show a few times, and you do cool stuff, and I love it, and that's why you're here. I want you to tell me how you, what is in your heart that you said yes to this show and that drives you in what you're doing right now.
So when I met Nick and got to get my hands on the book, which wasn't in physical copy, it was on his computer and his iPad, it resonated because it rang because of my story, because of my journey. When I was young and 3 years old or 3 days old when I was adopted, and going through my life, not knowing who my birth parents were, and having some abandonment issues come up for me, being told that didn't your mom love you enough to keep you, and were you a mistake, and things like that. And so as I read this book, I could see myself in the book, and I could also relate to other people feeling at their smallest and not knowing what to do, where to go, who to look to, how to get there. There's not a lot of, especially for men, where you're speaking, you're taught to like not express your emotions, your heart. You're not supposed to cry. You're not supposed to show your soft side. You're supposed to suck it up, pull up your panties, the type of a deal, right? And so As I saw this book and got to meet Nick, everything rang true. And I've always seen the best in other people. I could always see other people's giant. And I wanted them to be able to see it just like I saw them. And be able to see, like, I felt this way. I felt small. And that there's a possibility where you can grow, you can change, you can adapt. There's people that know how to help you get there, and there's people willing to help you to get there. And so set off on a journey with Nick Smith after a few months of persistent nagging to be involved. And we finally started down the path. We didn't know it would lead to this very moment sitting in front of Kellen and on LA Talk Radio. We had no clue when we started. And we just started stepping because the goal was to help one person. And it was always about the one, and it still is always about the one person that's in front of us at any given time. Because if we can help one person change and grow and see themselves as a giant, then it's all worth what we're doing, every bit of it.
So Ryan, it's clear from the emotion, the tenor tone of your voice and the intensity of your description, this is important and it's meaningful to you, and it's also very near your heart. What is it that helped you? Because I got the feeling, correct me if this is wrong, that you were able to see others, the giant in others, probably before you could see and accept your own.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, I know. Why? Why is it that you, Nick, me, others, seem to be able? I can't tell you how many people say, yeah, I know how to help people with what doesn't matter, marketing, this, that, and the other, but I can't do it for myself, which is a version of that same disease. So what do you think made it so that you could so lovingly see the giant in someone else and not in yourself?
Well, for me, and Nick probably has a version of this too. My biggest critic. It's like the dentist that doesn't do his own dentistry. Sometimes it's you can see how to help people from the sidelines, but doing it for yourself is seems harder. When it really got powerful and real for me, though, was when I realized that I didn't want to keep frosting the dog poop, is what Steve Hardison talks about, is you know, you cover yourself in layers and layers of frosting, and it's just covering up the dog poop. You're not really getting to the heart and soul of your own work, and I didn't want to be that guy. I wanted to, as hard as it was to face my own demons and my own internal struggles and look myself in the eye and pull back the layers, I wanted to be that type of person that was doing my own work. And we do that. This is something I watch Nick, and I'm sure, you know, in reverse, he watches me. We go through our own work. We go through and we look in the mirror at what's going on in our world, how we're behaving, our how we're showing up. We call it our being. What's showing up in the world is what's going on right here and right here. And it expresses from us. And so if you don't like where you're at, change what's in here and in here and manifest in your daily activity. And things come up still for me where it's not easy to look internally. But I have great coaching. I have great giants to lean on too that know what to do.
Nick, why do you suppose it is so easy to put the frosting on and so difficult to pull it off and, you know, face? And, you know, I know, put frosting on dog crap, I've heard all that. But the truth of who you are, because underneath you have a story about that dog crap, but it's not even true. It's not even true. It may not be what you want. It may be something, but you're afraid of it. People are generally afraid of it. They don't want to face it. Why is it so difficult to face that thing and start from the truth of where we are at this moment when we're trying to work on creating ourselves as a transparent, truthful presence instead of a show with layers? Why is that so hard?
Well, I see it as there are two versions of truth that you may be talking about here. The objective truth that you would say is as a whole, there's a truth that we could all see and agree on. But then there's that internal truth that you have, which is the story that you tell that seems like your reality. It's your belief system that you're telling yourself. And some of that's handed down from our families. It's handed down from our society, our culture. It's those proto values that we hold on to that we say this is important. And then we anchor those in with our belief systems, and our beliefs have a free pass. They have heuristics. They're automated. We don't have to question them. We've already done the questioning when we programmed them. And so they can just run, and we run them like they're truths. And so we run these belief systems as though they're true, and they're beliefs, right? And the word belief comes from the Germanic Glauben, which means to hold dear. And if you really look at the word belief biblically, it was put in there as trust, to have a confident expectation in something. So we go about with this confident expectation that things are going to go a certain way. And a lot of times that's from a limiting point of view. Like Townsend Wardlaw says that anytime you believe a belief, it becomes limiting by the nature of believing it. So we go around with these ideals and concepts of how the world should be. And we look at our objective reality and we measure ourselves against that reality and who we think we should be. And we don't measure up. So we feel depressed and we feel anxious about not measuring up. And so it feels terrible. So we go and frost the dog poop, right? Because we don't want to feel that. So we really don't want to feel the feelings of the measurement we're giving ourselves over some ideal we gave ourselves about this world we think we should have versus the objective world that we do have.
So the funny part of that is 90% of that is manufactured and has nothing to do with what we could. Like at any given moment, we could believe something else. So when you want to, and I realize beliefs are automated, and I understand that. I call that a B-deep, like your context straitjacket. And B-deep stands for beliefs, definitions, experiences, expectations, and perceptions. And so we live in this B-deep, our context straitjacket.
Like a blanket almost, right? Like a,
yeah, only I call it a straitjacket. But anyway, so when you want to help somebody take that apart, like they've been running automated beliefs and they have all the anchors and confirmation biases that those kinds of things have.
Yeah.
What do you do with someone who is uncomfortable, unhappy, and yet doesn't yet have the knowledge or the strength or the help to start understanding that beliefs are beliefs, or that context straitjackets, transparent, flexible? Where do you start?
Yeah, I start with awareness, because there's nothing you can do if you don't know it's there. And so when we go through our 12 journeys, we start with the first six journeys for a reason, because most people want to skip to the fun stuff. They want to go to dream building and abundance and all this, you know, the popular stuff. And we don't do that. We dive into the heavy stuff first. And so what I do when people go into that awareness state, I want to show them, I want to mirror for them compassion. I want to mirror for them understanding. I want to mirror for them empathy with that thing that's going on within them, because people are used to judging. I think Carl Jung said that people judge because it's easier than thinking. And that's what we do. We judge our awareness over the thing we didn't know was there. And then when we see it, we judge ourselves, and then we become justified in staying there because we no longer have to learn. We're justified in being pathetic. We're justified in judging ourselves as unworthy, undeserving. And so what I want to do instead is help them to navigate and really just sit with that part of themselves that calls them that, and show them that it's possible to have dialogue with that part of themselves and to really sit with it in conversation, just like I did with Steve Hardison in that parking lot where he put me on his shoulder and he stood up. I want to do that with those parts of me that feel insignificant and small. And when I say compassion, if I define that word, it means to suffer with another. Passion meaning suffer and calm with, right? Self-compassion is to do that with those parts of yourself that you haven't suffered with, that you haven't really sat with and felt the emotions of what that part went through when it was created. And here you run it as though it's you, but it's not you. It's a tether that was added to you to keep you feeling insignificant and small. And usually for your protection, you had a value of I love connection. And then you have a belief of I don't believe I am worthy of connection. And therefore you act as though that's true. And you create that in your reality. At your core, you want connection, but on the outside, you want to be isolated. Right. And so I want to sit with people and show them how to talk with that.
I love that, to having conversations. A favorite question I ask is who's talking? You know, people will say all these things and I'll say, okay, hold on. Who's talking? Yeah. Whose voice is that? I mean, I realize it's coming out of your mouth. Here. Yeah, but whose voice? I get a client talks about the committee in his head. Yeah. Ryan, I want you to talk about a little bit about these 12 journeys, at least the first six of them. And it would be fun if we had time to just take the whole lot of them and go through, but I don't know that we can get that done in an hour. But start talking about what are the hard ones that you start with or that are the beginning of this awareness journey, this place where you have conversation.
Well, first of all, you know, like there's aware, well, a non-consciousness. So there's nothing to do if you're not aware of what you're doing. It's like Nick said, then you move into a conscious awareness of what's going on. And when you get into that conscious awareness, then like Nick said, you start seeing, you know, the different parts of you that, you know, maybe you've been through different challenges and you start judging yourself and you're become aware of your way of, and the brain has automated those patterns and behaviors and systems because that's what it does. It automates things. And so you start developing this way of being. That's one of the easiest ways to describe it in a nutshell quickly. And then over time, you move into, you know, that awareness, and you can come into an observer or a judge. We teach people, instead of moving into that judgment phase, to move into an observer phase, something that has curiosity and compassion and empathy for, you know, your past life and the way that you were, and maybe things that now will not be, because you want to shift and change those behaviors to get what you want or to where you want to be. But now there is some level of grief that comes up inside of that. And so then we move through grief and talk about that and teach them to hold space and grace for themselves as they're going through this whole process. And we teach them some different things like Dabda and Swirl, which, you know, they're different ways of processing grief. And you could do your research on those methods. And they're pretty easy methods to do. And there's other ones that go deeper and deeper with somebody that's more qualified in that area. We more highlight it and talk about it and hold space for them, give them a few tools. If they really need to go deep, we refer them out to somebody that can handle those things. And then we dive into acceptance. We talk about those past parts of you as a bear in the field, that it has the right to be out in the field. You don't go running up to a bear and chasing it out of the field, kicking it, punching it, because you'll lose. You come into acceptance. That doesn't mean you have to like it. That doesn't mean you have to agree with it. It is what it is. It's there. And so that's what we talk about in acceptance, and to forgive yourself, to not cause additional harm in that. And then we move into gratitude, and with the positive effects of gratitude are amazing. It can move you through that grief by being aware of your current state and the abundance that's around you. And then we move into empowerment and really getting power back.
I'm gonna stop you there for a minute.
Sure.
So you've said a lot of things, and I realize there are 12 journeys, and that word implies a process with each one, and you've mentioned some really important pieces. I'm going to ask you later in the show where people will find out about these, because I don't want anyone listening to imagine that they somehow understand the breadth of what you offer. When you, Ryan, I have one more question for you, or Nick, you can jump into here too. I don't mean that you. You guys came together and created a business or a movement or both, and you're trying to do something. And the giants and the smalls, if I understand it, is there are times when we all have parts of us or all of us that feel small, unworthy, not noticed, disconnected, ignored, all those kinds of words. And there is a way, a path through these journeys to feel connected, important, valuable, precious, contributing, like you're able to do that stuff. Tell me about what you do. Like, what do you guys do? Do you conduct seminars, workshops to talk about this message? I know you have broadcasts once a month and stuff like that, but I know there's a lot more to it. So tell me a little bit more about what that looks like, how you spread this message of change that you have both experienced and then codified in a book and structure.
Nick, I spoke a lot. You can share. I want to hear from you.
Yeah, we can do that. We have a lot of ways that we reach people. So we have the book, which would be the primary metaphor. So when you read the metaphor, you'll read it about your inner world and what's going on within you. It doesn't have anything to do with any other human being. And so it's about you. And so we also have the Tribe of Giants, which is our global community. And that's where we bring the world together as giants. They call themselves giants. They go out there and they live the most giant life that they can. We have our Wake Up with Giants TV podcast, where we have guests come in every week and we interview them and find out their journey from going from small to giant. And we share that with our network and the world. We do what are called integrative book readings. So we take the book, we summarize it, and then we go through the 12 journeys and we teach you a basic understanding. It's like doing the Duolingo of the giants and the smalls. It's a real basic understanding of the language of the giants. So we teach you a foundation of what we're talking about when we say 12 journeys. Then we go into what are called Sum Gigante groups, where we take groups of 10 to 20 people and we spend 8 weeks with you and we dive deep into the 12 journeys. So we spend 4 weeks diving into the first six journeys and doing a discussion around that on the fourth week. So we do 3 weeks of training and 1 week of Q&A and support. And then we go through the growth journeys. And so you have root journeys, growth journeys, and your legacy, right? And so in the Sum Gigante groups, our goal is to teach you and your group how to implement this foundation and this framework into your life, regardless of what you're doing. We don't care what skill you put onto it. When you do the 12 journeys, now when you take the frosting, it's going on something good. Right, it's a cupcake instead of dog poop, because we're making what coaches do work. So in essence, we've had coaches where they have clients who are not ready for them, either by fees or they don't have the framework necessary to do that level of coaching. So we have them go through our program first so that we can create a foundation and framework that they can use for the rest of their lives. We want them to be able to use that again and again and again, depending, you know, no matter what they do with it. So those are some of our ways that we give back. We also speak and do trainings publicly. We spoke at doTERRA in April for their leadership team, and that was a lot of fun. We taught 300 teachers down in Southern Utah. We love teaching those that teach others, because they can take this back to their I don't know if you've called that their kids or their I don't want to say subordinates, because I don't really like that word, but
yeah. Associates, yeah, associates, the people yeah. that they have a stewardship for. Yes. I mean, every person at different times in their life has a responsibility to share, to build, to lift, to bless, to serve. And you know, the idea of servant leadership, the whole idea. I mean, I served in C-suite positions in different companies in the U.S. and Canada in my executive career, and in that responsibility, you know, there's a lot of change now from leadership of 20, 30 years ago, 40, 50, 60 years ago, command and control to collaborative and empowering leadership, and the whole recognition that people perform when they are cared about and empowered instead of just ordered around. But anyway, so there's lots of ways to think about it and lots of ways that that's important. I get the sense that, and this is to either one of you, I get the sense that the need for these awarenesses, the small parts of us, and the need to acknowledge them, to connect with them, to allow them to be what they are because they came in some way, and to love them and to, like the bear, just let them be, understand them, converse with them, change the contract with them, whatever you do, that the need for that seems to me to be increasing in terms of what's going on in the world and so forth. Am I full of crap, or do you see that?
Well, that's a whole other thing, Kellen.
Okay.
You're full of crap or not. But no, you're not. No, you're not full of crap. I would say that mental health was on the rise, you know, like the issues with mental health. I think with phones and the video games and all those things that are happening with children, and they're not getting out and playing and not having the social networks that we had as kids. Even me, I'm 42 years old. In 1981, I played in the curb and in the streets and in the field with G.I. Joes and blew up stuff and probably caught some things on fire that I wasn't supposed to catch things on fire, you know, with. But I got outside and played. My kids don't do that like I did. There's not that connectivity. And I think that it's translated, especially since COVID, I would imagine that has even exasperated the problems and the issues that are coming forward. And that's just a broad brush, because there's a whole lot of other things that are going on, but a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, a lot of worry, a lot of doubt, a lot of frustration, a lot of it financial. And so there's these different things that are going on inside of a home, or the lack of, that are causing so many things, a disconnection. And so, yeah, I think that there's more of a need than ever to show people that, hey, you are a giant already. It's in you. We've just layered the heck out of it. And there's ways to deal with things in a healthy manner. And I don't think a lot of people were taught those things. I think parents these days, especially, I'm in that boat. You 9 to 5 or even longer every day. And sometimes two-parent households that are both working, or single moms or single dads that are out there working, it's tough. And so these kids, I think, you know, they were growing up, these generations that behind us even, that kind of feel like that maybe they're worse off than we were as kids. So that's just, you know, part of it, I would imagine.
Nick, I want you to think about that out loud, too. There's lots of stuff in what Ryan said, and I don't disagree with that. There is an explosion of everybody do whatever you want, and it's okay, and everybody accept everybody for who they are, and that's fine on some level. But at the same time, there is an oppression that comes out of that to be and say and do a certain thing, which I think creates this kind of pressure of, am I okay all the time, instead of just being allowed to sort of experience and grow up, even as, not even talking about necessarily kids, although it's worse for them. Can you talk a little bit about that from your
experience? Can I nerd out a little bit?
If you like.
Call it Nick knowledge. I'm ready. We're all ready.
You know, I imagine if you throw a rock into a pond, right? It's a glass pond, and you throw a rock in, and at the core, at the center of that pond or that ripple is that rock, and it hits the water and causes rippling outward. We are that rock. We are that impact point in this world. And if you think about the marvel of the human body and the brain, right? We have 7 octillion atoms, 37 trillion cells, 100,000 miles of blood vessels, 200 million liters of blood, 86 billion neurons, 85 billion glial cells, enough brain storage to store 2.5 petabytes of information. That's enough to store the internet twice. We could store 3 million hours of TV in one human brain. Yet many of us are going around like we're idiots, like we can't do a thing. But at our core, we are walking around in this marvel of a machine that can take what is and transform it into anything that we can imagine. Like Henry Thoreau says, that we should live the life we can imagine, right? We should be living that life. Yet many of us are out here on the fringes of the ripples, looking for the life and the approval that they think others think they should have. Lisa Feldman Barrett says that when we feel like we're not measuring up to the ideals we think others have for us, we have anxiety, which we have an epidemic of right now, because everybody's looking out here on the fringes for their acceptance and their approval, and they're putting their self-control out here, where the control, the identity, should be really at that ripple point, that impact point, which is the giant with a capital I. It's the us that's beyond our value systems. It's the us beyond our beliefs. It's the us beyond our emotions and our thoughts and our judgments of ourselves. And if we can get back to recognizing that we are already giant, that we no more have to become the giant than an acorn has to become an oak tree. It's already there. It's programmed for it. But if we always put our control out here on the fringes, then we'll never become it, because we never measure up to what we think others are thinking. And that's constantly changing. It's changing at a lightning pace, right? So the idea of measuring up and getting to that point and you find out the goalpost has been moved, you'll never reach it. And then you feel insignificant, right? So the idea here is to get back to expressing what you already are, which is that giant within. It's already programmed in there. And when we can get people to pull back into themselves and recognize their greatness, it's not a greatness or superiority over others. It's just that you are innately born with greatness in you. Yet we're looking out here for that approval. We have this external identity, this external control.
And when we don't feel that way, we numb out. We you know, you're talking about being okay, like all this need to be okay and be okay and be okay and not feel it. So a lot of times we binge watch TV, we eat, we drink, we do drugs, whatever the thing is that you avoid. Avoidance can be that too.
I have a thing
really
to get
with it, right?
Yeah. I give you guys a funny word. You talked about that identification with what others think, and I have a name for that. And I thought it up at the beginning of COVID because I always say this kills more people than COVID ever will. And it is the Wittot fungus. And it's an acronym, WITOT, and it stands for what I think others think. And so I say the Wittot fungus kills more people than COVID ever will. Anyway, and it's, you know, that's what you were describing. So you've been at this now for a little bit, a few years. I know that you have some really powerful goals, and I'd like you to talk about the goals that you have that are now, the goals for this year or these years. I mean, I don't know how you frame them. But I want you to, because you've talked about talking to teachers and talking to a large company, doTERRA, my aunt and her husband made a living with a doTERRA product for many, many years. And they're now older than me because they're my aunt. So, and so you're doing that work. Talk a little bit about what your vision, what are you trying to do with this wisdom? Because you've clearly studied, you've had experience, you've been broken, you have come to a place where you have returned to the internal story, and you're trying to share that. So talk a little bit about your goals.
Yeah, you know, I would label myself as a wounded healer, right? That I'm not done. I'm still learning this stuff, and I'm teaching it as soon as I can learn it to those that are in this journey with me. I'm a bridge walker. I'm walking alongside people as they are doing their work. I'm helping them to know how to do that. So I step with them in the journey. I'm far enough ahead that I can lead them, but I'm right next to them so that I can relate to them. And our vision is to impact 100 million lives globally. And so we're going to do that with the book. We'll do that with other books. We'll do that with the movie. Our goal is to make this into a movie, a Pixar style, Disney style animated movie, 2D. We've been in talks about that. We're going to do that through our podcast. We'll do that through our community, the Tribe of Giants. We'll do that in any way that we can. I feel like green eggs and ham, right? If would you eat it with him or whatever he says, right? I feel like
I would
that.
Do it with melon. I would do it with Helen.
I would even do it with a felon. We went to Vernal where we went into the prison system and taught the felons. And it was impactful. They arrested us. They put us in jail. They processed us. They fed us their food just like they get to go through every day. And we taught them the 12 journeys. We taught them the giants and the smalls. We don't care who the person is. Every human being has value. Mm-hmm. And if we can get them to wake up to that, when they can see the value in themselves, I believe they'll start seeing the value in other people. And maybe they'll treat them a little differently. And so, yeah, Laura, I'm going to do a call out here. Shout out for Laura Lunt, who hooked us up with doTERRA. You know, people like her who are setting up these integrated book readings, Rebecca French, some of the original OG giants out there that have helped us to get to where we are today, that helped us create the framework of the 12 journeys. Alyssa Ann, Rachel Smart, you know, Nicole Castillo. And so these are some of the people that helped us to establish what we have today. And we wouldn't be here without them.
Are the the Giants and the Smalls, the fable book that you have written, are the 12 journeys in there, or do people need to go somewhere else to find a description of what that looks like?
They're in there, yeah, but not labeled. Right, Ryan. Do you want to tell where to find
well,
that?
We came up with, yeah, well, we came up with them, like it was after. Nick wrote the book in 2009. We get together. We started through this journey with those OG members like we were talking about, and it started to develop and come forward. We started seeing these principles that were in the book that even Nick, as he wrote the book, that wasn't a framework for writing the book. It downloaded. And we went backwards to it and saw all these things clearly of different phases of people's lives. And so that's how we came up with it. Now, giantsandsmalls.com is probably the easiest way to go there and to find those things. We have a ton of content on YouTube and our tribe of giants on Facebook. It's called A Tribe of Giants. And so those are the easiest places to find those parts. And then our Sum Gigante groups, it means I am giant. That's where we teach the 12 journeys.
So there's a Facebook group, A Tribe of Giants. There's Giants. So A Tribe of Giants is a Facebook group. Giants and Smalls is a YouTube channel. Giantsandsmalls.com is a website where people can find out more about this. So you said something about making a movie, and I think that's spectacular. Is that near term or is that in several years? Like, where is that?
We don't even know.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. It's okay. Yes, it's a great answer.
Yeah. Truthfully, we had hopes that it would be out pretty quickly. Apparently, that is not going to be the case. We have this vision of a Pixar-style movie, 2D animated in the old style. You know, like I think Angel Studios has a new movie that they just put out that is similar to what we want to do. It's the idea is to have people go in there, have families go in there and have their kids come out of that movie theater saying, I want to be a giant, and to understand that message. Man, there's the emotion, right?
Mm. I don't know how.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't need to know how. I want you to take a minute, each one of you. Ryan, I'm going to start with you so Nick can breathe for a minute. Ryan, I want you to talk for a minute about, well, that's a good thing about having three people here. I want you to talk for a minute about something that has happened for you on this journey that you didn't understand how it was going to happen. You didn't know, and now it's here. And here's why I want to do that. I can tell you right now, from the position that I used to be in before I started the changes that happened for me, and the end of 2007, and I know many people who look at a situation and say, I can't do that. That won't happen. And Nick, you gave the metaphor of putting someone on the shoulder, you know, holding them up so they can see, because when you're higher, you can see further. But rather than talk about it just metaphorically, Ryan, I want you to tell us something that's happened for you that you now say, this has happened. I didn't know how. I didn't even believe it. But here we are, X. So that people can understand that really happens with regular people who don't know how the heck anything's going to happen, and it does anyway. Give me an example.
Well, quickly, Nick and I, we were working at an RV dealership, and I met Nick and asked him if we could be business partners. He said no. 3 months later, he came back and said, yeah, let's do it, but not on Giants and the Smalls. Let's do it in sales training. We spent a bunch of time working on trying to help other people become six-figure income earners and above, because we knew how to do that. Into a meeting that we were attending, in walked Richard Paul Evans, who's a 40-some-odd New York Times best-selling author. And at that moment in time, we had stepped down a totally different path and trying to put together a business, not knowing how we would put it all together. We just knew that we would go down this path. And in walks Richard Paul Evans, and that changed everything. He told Nick, hey, I want you to come to my event. Your book is amazing. And we knew instantly we needed to shift. Well, we started putting things together, and we didn't know how we were going to put this book out. We didn't know what was going to happen. We had this goal of reaching and impacting 100 million lives. So we just started stepping forward. And the old adage of how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You're going to find things that don't work, probably more ways that don't work than work. My life as a sum total is more of a failure than a success. And yet I am a success. It doesn't math. It's amazing. What happens when you start stepping things from the ethereal, and I'm swirling my arms because there's so much that we didn't see. We launched March 17th, 2020, the worst time in history to launch a Kickstarter for a book. COVID happened. The world shut down. People closed their wallets. And yet, we still felt called. We stepped forward. It was a little clunky. We didn't know how it was going to take off, kind of like an albatross, just flapping our wings all over the place. And in stepped this person and that person and another person. In walked Nicole Castillo. In walked Alyssa Ann. In walked et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All these people that helped step it along. We didn't have Wake Up with Giants TV on YouTube and 500-600 pieces of content. We had a few pieces of content. We had a book, kind of. And maybe 100 followers, and probably most of them were family and friends. You know, like, please, please join our group. You know, but it all came, most of it came from unexpected events. You don't see it coming.
I'm going to interrupt you because I want to give Nick a chance to talk. No, I love what you're saying. And it's just that we have 50 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
It's not hurry, but I just want to have Nick a chance to answer this question. Hmm. Nick, I don't care if you get emotional. So that's not going to concern me, the audience, or anybody. And if it does, I don't care that they're worried about it. So what is it in your heart that has come to you, for you, from a place of feeling as broken as you did in 2009? Here we are 14 years later, and that's a very small amount of time.
Yeah,
it might be long. It might seem long, but it's not. I want you to talk about that. What has happened, not only externally, but maybe internally also? You can include that, the spiritual, the ethereal. You know, Thoreau said, boldly live the life you dreamed, and crap happens you wouldn't have expected. And that's a poor paraphrase. But
great.
You can look
that's
it up.
Crap.
Yeah, stuff happens you can't imagine. New laws, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I want you to talk about that for a minute.
Yeah. 2009, I wrote the book. I recorded it in this recorder right here. I would drive to work and I'd capture it. And then I'd go home and I'd write it. I'd read it to my kids. And I thought, this thing's going to be a bestseller. I could see it. I could see myself on stage talking about it. I did my first Kickstarter in 2011, $10,000 Kickstarter. I raised $800 for the images, right? Failed. Couldn't do it. My wife said, go back to work. She said, you do that or we're getting divorced. I went back to work. I set it all down. I put this on a shelf. I got my degree in industrial psychology. I graduated with honors, right? 3.96 GPA. All the while feeling frustrated that I had put my dream aside, right? Became an amazing salesman. Didn't even think to pick this up until later in life when I was losing my mind from anxiety and ended up losing my marriage anyway. And I picked up the book again off the shelf as a manuscript, and I started paying for illustrations one at a time. That's all I could do. That's what you see today. Took me a year and a half to pay for these illustrations. One at a time, one a month. That's what I could do. Run into Ryan Morris, who says, I want to work with you. I say, no, we end up working together. We run into Richard Paul Evans. Book becomes a reality. Helps make it what it is today. In 2020, we launch on March 17th. We think it's going to take off. The economy shuts down. It takes off like an albatross on the rescuers. It's flopping along the sand and not flying. And then all of a sudden it takes off and we fund and the book takes off. And then we start thinking of what else can we do? And we step into that and we create this thing called the Tribe of Giants. And I start documenting my journey in these videos in the basement of my brother's house when I'm divorced, living there, feeling insignificant. Again, right? Just stepping every day, stepping. Now we have over 150 episodes with people like James Malinchek, you, Kellen, Becky Robbins, Nick Nanton, Ivan Meisner, just incredible guests who have shared their wisdom, who continue to share their wisdom that we never saw that coming. We have a movie that will be produced. I don't know how. I just know it is. Yeah.
I'm saying this, yes, because I have a friend who bootstrapped a feature-length movie, and it is now on Amazon and everything else. It took him several years to do it, but he did it. It's called The Impact Factor. And it's done. It's on Amazon. He's got it to some film festivals and everything else, and did it for practically no budget. So can it be done? Yes. I personally am good friends with someone who did it. So, yes, you can do it.
Yeah.
I am just delighted. Our time is spent. I want to thank you for sharing your heart. I want to thank you for what you're doing. I love you both. I am grateful for the impact that you're creating in the world. I support your mission to reach 100 million and more to help people realize they are giants. Their heritage is giant. They were created on purpose to come and add good to the world. You two guys are beautiful examples of that. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
So I want you to watch this again. I want you to go check all this out. The Tribe of Giants, giantsandsmalls.com. You won't find anything better to lift your heart, bless your soul, and give you some enthusiasm. And if that story of just stepping forward and making stuff happen doesn't help you realize you can do this right here, right now, wherever you are, I don't know what will. I know you can move forward right now and create your own version of your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.